You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
You're listening to episode number 31 of Living the Dream with Rory O'Malley. If you like the podcast, remember to subscribe, rate, and review.
Audition, side job, swimming upstream. Believe it or not, you're living the dream.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Living the Dream. I am your host, Rory O'Malley. I have been away for a little bit of time. My apologies, but I have been having a blast in San Francisco, enjoying the summer, enjoying family and friends who've been here to visit me and see the show. My mom was here for a week. My husband Gerald was here. It has just been a wonderful, wonderful time here in San Francisco doing Hamilton and you know, just hanging out. We've also been doing the show like crazy, which, you know, we always are. But we just this week, the 4th of July week, we did the show 7 times in 4 days, which I think is a record. At least it's, I'm sure some other company has done the show 7 times in 4 days. Certainly there have been long runs of, you know, no day off for like 16 shows in a row. But 7 times in 4 days is a lot. I think it's pretty much as you can do legally of Hamilton. But we got through it. This cast is incredible. Their stamina and their dedication to the show and the whole company in general. It's pretty remarkable. But yeah, I've been taking some time off and enjoying this wonderful city that we're in, which is hard to do. Because we're at the theater so much. And when you're not at the theater, you want to relax. But man, you've got to enjoy your surroundings when you're in a city that's as great as San Francisco. And I've been lucky to get to do that. I am also glad that I was able to talk with my guest this week, Isaiah Johnson. Isaiah plays General George Washington. It's my second George Washington on the podcast. I realized that after I spoke with him. I've also spoken to Christopher Jackson, who's one of our earlier episodes. Isaiah is a great guy, a wonderful dad, good husband, and so good in the show. He has a really interesting story, and he was actually a part of the workshop of Hamilton when Christopher Jackson couldn't be a part of it for one of the times they did the workshop. He stepped in and played George Washington, so he's been a part of it for a long time, and his performance is pretty remarkable. We also talk about his performance in The Color Purple, where he played Mister, a really complicated character, and he was so magnificent in it. He's a great actor, a good guy, and his dressing room is right next to mine, so he's one of the few people in the cast that I get to see every show. Everyone else, I have to work pretty hard to go find them, since, you know, they're on stage when I'm backstage or vice versa. So enjoy my conversation with Isaiah Johnson.
Testing.
One, two. We're on. We're in the drum room, back in the drum room, trying to find a space in this theater that is not being occupied or used is almost impossible.
Hamilton employs 250 people currently across all casts.
Is that the true number?
It's the true number.
You know things like this. Who told you 200?
I keep my ear to the ground.
My God.
And as many tours as we give, you learn a lot of information just on the bye-bye.
Because you need some tidbits when you bring people backstage.
I need a new tidbit. every tour.
I have the same lines that I've been giving for the last year.
Yep.
I haven't changed one damn thing.
Nah, it's like Disney. I start with the costumes,
yeah,
and I work my way around to the stage. I take them through the little secret door, which I don't know if I'm supposed to do, but I do it anyway.
Right. To make everyone feel special.
That's right. And I stop by, you know, talking about the bricks of revolution.
Uh-huh.
I even put some of my own philosophy on it.
The bricks of revolution. That's like the design. That's David's design. Or
the bricks of revolution. Oh, these bricks we could use to build, or these bricks we could use to throw. Typically in America, we choose to build with them instead of throw them. Although sometimes I feel like it's warranted that they should be thrown. Other countries throw them. I don't know why we can't. We're trained.
Wow.
No, I'm only saying that because, like, it occurred. Like, I was doing a show in London.
Right.
I was doing a show at the Old Vic. And while I was there, I would watch the news every day. I would read, like, all the papers. I fell in love with London because of the news, the quality of their news.
Right.
And I am somebody who reads the news every morning. Like, I read the newspaper or whatever. And I was there, and students who were upset that they had raised the cost of, like, student tuition.
Tuition, yeah.
Literally waited outside of Buckingham Palace and threw tomatoes and shit at the royal car.
Wow.
And I was just like, on student tuition they did that.
Yeah.
There's a certain aspect of democracy, I feel like, that we're not exercising. And although I don't condone somebody throwing a brick.
Right.
That was an exaggeration. However, in terms of, like, citizens taking power into their own hands to say, like, we're not going to stand for that anymore besides a march.
Right.
Because a march isn't really inconvenient. The police make sure you don't block the path of the important people that you're marching against.
Right.
So it's like, it's a statement. It's more of a statement to get the other parts of the United States that aren't aware.
Right.
Aware of the issue.
Sure.
That's the purpose that marches do now.
Yeah.
It's great
to have you on the podcast.
There's a
my
long...
God. We've never launched so quickly into
the
civil
depth.
Disobedience.
Yes.
No, I know what you're saying, and I think that's totally true in a lot of ways, that other cultures and other places maybe are a little bit more rebellious, and we used to be the rebels, and certainly we tell the story of how we were rebels.
Yeah.
Every single show. But there are, you know, there are certainly a lot of people trying right now.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
they're making their best effort.
Absolutely.
And you know, A for effort. And, and who knows? And hopefully with all of the peaceful discourse, I think that it really is getting the information out there.
Yeah.
What, you know, and waking people up.
That's right. And I think that, you know, I think part of the reason is we're just such a young country, right?
Yeah.
Like, part of the reason this doesn't happen is because we're young. We've never had a coup. The government's never been turned over.
Right.
Like, there's so many activities that go on in other countries that are just older than we are. And so the people are more familiar with the reason why they're throwing tomatoes. They know the history.
Right.
We're still trying to figure it out.
Right.
I was just reading the news the other day, and NPR, every 4th of July, they post the entire Declaration of Independence.
Right.
People were commenting that it was propaganda because they didn't know the Declaration of Independence.
Right.
Because we're
the parts saying that you can overthrow a tyrant, they thought were referring to someone who's holding the office of president. And yeah, I mean, it's a crazy world we live in right now.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's things are happening so quickly.
Yes.
And everyone's trying to respond in the best way they can, even
that's
if that means just breathing.
That's right. Know? Absolutely. Like,
just breathing.
And that's necessary.
Yeah.
Because we're also an emotionally based country. I mean,
yeah.
I think that we as citizens in America, we respond to something emotionally first. We're not very well read as a country.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's evident in our literacy rate as it compares to the rest of the world. But I think that, you know, because we are emotionally responsive more so than other things,
right.
Breathing is necessary for us.
Yeah.
It's important for us.
Yeah. Okay, so
yeah.
Clearly, this is, you know, something that is important to you.
Yeah.
Be having a political conscience and having the discourse and, mm-hmm. and thinking about that, has that increased because of Hamilton? I mean, clearly it's always been there. You said you always read the news.
Yeah.
But how has being a part of Hamilton, being George Washington,
yes,
being this character that has so much weight on his shoulders mm-hmm. that you have to play out mm-hmm. 8 times a week, mm-hmm. how has that changed your perspective, or has it made you just think so much more about the world?
Yeah, I think for me, you know, doing this play at this time, I think what has influenced me the most is like steeping myself in the history, the actual information, the Ron Chernow biographies, and you know, other aspects of history that are pertain to the story that we're telling. I think that's influenced me more, just because my understanding, I feel like, because I know the history, my understanding about what's happening now is, it's just more well-rounded, I'll say. I don't want to say more mature, but it's just well-rounded. I find that a lot of people today, especially some of our younger, newer, politically savvy folks, they don't know the history. And so they think that everything that the issues that we're having are new.
Right.
B, they think Trump is the worst we've ever had. C, you know, they don't understand that we are a very young country and we're still trying to figure out who we are and what we stand for. Mm-hmm. We're still trying to come together on that. You know, up until now, it's been the select few 1% people who are determining that for the entire country, but the entire country has never necessarily gone along with that.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
But yeah.
We're too young to revolt against something that we haven't decided collectively that that's us.
Well, and also I think that everyone has access to information and quickly in a way that has never been the case before with the internet. And I think that's changing everything. Yeah. I think in the last 10 years, the fact that people are putting their thoughts out there personally over Twitter and online through social media, I think that has changed our views on who we are, because everyone has literally a platform to speak from.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely.
The town crier. We are all town criers in our own town.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Which is why I think it's important for artists to be politically conscious. You don't have to be, I'm not saying that every artist should be a revolutionary, but you should definitely know what's happening in society. You should be a part of it, and you should know that you have the opportunity to be a part of its change. I think next to politicians, I think, you know, music artists, Hollywood artists, artists who are part of the American marketing machine that Americans created and gave to the rest of the world as our most important export, I think we all have an opportunity and the influence to be able to actually establish what is American culture. Because we already have. We just did it, you know, by the way.
Right.
I shared my talent. Everybody seemed to love it. And now everybody's on, you know, my, I don't know, talent train. But then it goes beyond that, because if I get on tweet and tweet something, everybody understands, you know, they're hit to that as well. It's like, oh, damn, I thought I was just a singer.
Right.
Turns out I'm a voice.
A voice of a generation. Okay, so let's back up.
Yeah, let's back up.
Who are you? Where did you come from? And, you know, like, where did you grow up, first of all?
Yeah. I grew up a lot of different places. Okay. My mother was in the military, mainly Alaska.
It's amazing.
I moved to Alaska from Louisiana when I was about 10 or 11, you know. And
what part of Alaska?
Anchorage.
Anchorage.
So not the cold, icy part.
Right.
But the cold, icy part.
Sure, yeah. I mean, it's not Florida.
Alaska's huge.
Yeah, yeah,
That's what people don't understand. It's the largest state we have. You can only fit one Alaska in the United States.
Right.
So I think that, you know, what people know of Alaska, it's huge, you know.
Yeah.
It's a 6-hour flight just to get to the middle of it from Anchorage.
Yeah, I mean, people fly around in planes like cars, because that's the only way to really travel in between
towns,
right?
Absolutely. And that's mainly up north, or if you're going like off of the mainland down the Aleutian chain, but otherwise.
So you grew up, so did you go to high school in Anchorage? See, there, the stool just did that. We're in the drum room and a stool vibrates. I told you, didn't it scare you?
I'm gonna unplug it.
I don't understand our drummer John.
Give me PTSD.
I know. I don't know. Don't worry about it. It'll be fine.
It's taped together.
It'll be a part of our comedy.
Does that happen while he's playing?
I think so.
That's insane.
I think it keeps you awake.
Is that what that does?
I don't know. I really don't know. If you're a drummer, can you please email in why you would want your stool to vibrate?
I'm gonna go ahead and say, just, you know,
stool is plugged in.
It's plugged in, but that's not a Hamilton thing. I don't want people to think that Hamilton are tyrants. And
I think it's to keep your butt from falling asleep.
John voluntarily paid for that to keep himself awake.
I think so. I hope so.
It's John's idea.
But I get that. But what I don't understand is why he's not here.
Why is
it vibrating? No one's touching anything. I was in this room by myself.
Yeah.
Actually, no, I was with Emmy, and it just started going off. We were working on something. It's aggressive. It literally shakes like it's an earthquake. It's its own little earthquake. It's okay. We'll be okay.
A little butt quake.
It'll be fun. So you're in Alaska. You go to high school in Alaska?
I went to high school in Alaska.
And what's the theater scene in Alaska? How did you get into...
It's not really a scene, but, I mean, there are a lot of, you know, I can't call them expats because Alaska is a part of the United States, but... There are a lot of people who have moved to Alaska who did the arts in New York, who did it, you know, they're highly educated in music and drama. And, you know, I think I was fortunate enough to be able to kind of start discovering that skill set in Alaska. I did all the high school play. Well, not all of them, but I did a lot of the high school plays and musicals. And I did swing choir and all state choir and the Anchorage Youth Symphony and all that stuff. You know, I definitely steeped myself in the arts when I went there, which had been a totally different experience had I stayed in Louisiana. But, you know, that kind of started the bug, I would say, maybe.
Right.
I still didn't think that it could be a professional thing. I didn't decide that I could possibly be a professional actor, like, for my life until I was a junior in college.
Really?
Yeah.
And where did you go?
Howard University in D.C.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Which is also why I think the arts was introduced to me in the way of it being responsible for social change.
Sure.
Like, it was never not that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, the people that taught it to me, I went to Howard. It was the only school I applied to because I fell in love with the city of D.C. Because in Washington, D.C., artists have been doing this since the beginning. Like, it's just that environment. That's the type of artist they create. They create artists who are... Their social change takes them beyond just, you know, singing their folk song on the stoop.
Sure.
They gather the community together. You know, they use that thing to, like, do fundraisers for schools or kids. You know what I mean? Like,
or to make a point or to have a message.
Yeah, to make a point. But I mean, it goes beyond just the talent. Like, they use the talent in order to galvanize the community in a more, like, roll up your sleeves active way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So your singing on the stoop becomes like, no, would you sing when the kids are coming to eat the free breakfast that we've all done a fundraiser for?
Sure. It's not just...
It's about the artist.
Yeah. Yeah. When I was at school...
Mm-hmm.
One of the directors told us that he had this student who was in class, and they were talking about Greek theater, and the student said, "So what you're saying is, in Greek theater, that it's more about the audience than the actor." Mm. And he was like, "Actually, all theater is about the audience, not just this." And that's really interesting that you would say that.
Yeah.
And it always kind of stuck with me because I think that obviously we know that this is for an audience, but it really is like what else is it supposed to do for an audience? Not just entertain, but like stimulate create,
yes,
give, you, yes, know, what are the things that it can do for an audience?
And, yeah,
you know, it's something like Hamilton. Sure. Mm-hmm. You see the effects of it every single day, but sometimes you're in a job or a role, mm-hmm, that you don't, but you're saying at Howard, you got involved in theater and it was just inherently,
yeah,
this is about giving back to,
that's right,
community, giving back to,
yes,
your audience.
Yeah. It, you know, what we do is always,
hey, how you
supposed
doing?
To been an act of service, you know?
Sure.
It was never not supposed to be an act of service, you know? This whole idea about acting being like a career now, that's something that's very, very new and recent.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, when you really look at it, like Al Pacino, Meryl Streep, you know, Susan Sarandon, like that generation of actors,
yeah,
they were outside of like folks in Hollywood who literally got lucky because somebody saw them at a party and put them in a film. Do you know what I mean? Like outside of that, that generation of actors, the actor studio guys, the conservatory, yeah, guys, those were the ones who actually for the first time were able to like, I'm going to actually train as an actor because I love the craft so much.
Yeah.
And then them becoming like millionaire A-listers was a byproduct of that.
Sure.
After that generation did that, everybody after them was just like, oh, I can get a degree in it.
Yeah.
I can go to grad school.
Right.
I can like basically structure my future in this kind of corporate mentality of acting.
Sure.
And that's what's happening now. But I challenge everybody to just keep in mind that it's an act of service. It always has been. I don't think it was never supposed to be, you know, the corporate job. And we're fighting, right, for that now. Sorry.
Thank you. There's a little
mosquito
bug in here.
We're fighting for
Isaiah,
that now. I'm obsessed now. We're still fighting, you know, for the right, for what we do to be still considered a real regular job. Mm-hmm. You hear it every day in the questions people ask us after the show when we sign autographs. Like, people still don't understand that. No, this is... It's a job that,
yeah,
you can train for and be quite proficient at.
Yeah.
And it is a service that obviously we as inherently as human beings need and will always have.
Yeah.
But the fact that we're still kind of fighting for the right, you know, even the simple fact that when taxes come around, you know, they take what we make in a week and be like, oh, this is what you're making in a year. Not true.
Right.
It's a 6-month contract.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, our taxes should be, we should be in a different category, I feel like, if you're an artist. The same way you get tax breaks if you're sometimes, you know, if you're in the educational field or,
mm-hmm,
in a field of service. Our field should be considered a field of service, in my opinion.
Right. Well, I mean, so you are in Howard. That's where you got that kind of, that's where that was developed, that it's an act of service.
Yeah.
So, but it's an act of service and it's also hard to get a job. So how did you go from this is something that, yeah, I'm doing and it's an act of service to I'm going to do this professionally?
Well, there's kind of two reasons. One, I got into a point in college where I had to take 2 non-consecutive semesters off. I ran out of money. I was sleeping in my car for about 3 months.
Really?
I was couch surfing with friends.
In D.C.?
In D.C. I, you know, I had a Dodge Intrepid. And if you know, it's a compact car, but it is spacious on the inside. Mm. And so I was sleeping in my car, man. And, you know, I got a job in corporate America / the nonprofit sector.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know what? Like, I'm not in school.
Right.
I'm working a regular job, but I've gone to school to study this craft. If there's ever an opportunity for me to get the professional experience or to at least step out there and see, now's the time. Because,
right,
I couldn't audition for professional shows while I was in school. So I,
right,
was like, this is the time. So I went on an audition for Once on This Island. The choreographer of Once on This Island, Michael Bobbitt, was directing another show called Petite Rouge, and I got 2 shows in 1 audition, and that automatically gave me my equity card because they were 2 equity shows.
Wow.
And to this day, I always give him credit for getting my equity card.
Yeah.
And that kind of started my professional career. That was back in 2003.
Right.
And fortunately, you know.
So you got your equity card at that point where you're like couch surfing and sleeping in your
car if
necessary.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
It's pretty cool. So I was working pretty regularly because DC is a small community, and I decided to go back and finish school. But that kind of started my professional career, and I've kind of pretty much been doing that professionally ever since. I mean, you know, I've always loved teaching, so I've always taught and built on my experience as an educator whenever I wasn't doing a show. But I've, you know, there's only been, you know, maybe twice where I've been completely without work.
Really?
And one of those years was when I had decided to just turn down anything that I felt like was not challenging enough, basically.
So since 2003, you've only had two periods of time where you weren't working.
Like two periods of time consistently, like where there's like a long stretch where I like, I need to go get another job. I've always had like another side hustle or two to like keep the rent. Do you know what I mean? But primarily there's only been like really two times where there's been like a long stretch without any work.
Right.
Now, what I consider work is just doesn't have to be Broadway. I've only done 4 or 5 Broadway shows, but
Four or five?
Hey, listen, Grace Ann Kingsbury has done 11. He got the gypsy robe.
Oh, my God. Well, I mean, I'm amazed by that because I am, as far as, like, work that pays, like, work that actually, like, you know, that could feed you, I've had, I don't even know how many times I've gone through that period. And and we're about the same age.
Yeah.
You're younger. I'm the oldest person in the cast. You're the only. You almost came close. I could have not had that title. Damn it!
I wish I had it.
No, you don't. but there has been years, including 2015, where I worked probably 7 weeks out of 2015.
Yes,
you know. So I'm always amazed because there are a lot of people who It's been a learning experience for me to have these conversations with people because, you know, there are people who are like that or even who haven't worked even more.
Yeah.
But there are people like you who have had consistent work.
Yeah.
And that's got to be, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
But I wonder how that shapes your perspective of this industry. Have you ever wanted to quit?
Yes.
Okay, because I'm
every show I do, I want to quit.
while you're in the show?
While I'm in the show.
Wow.
There hasn't been not one show where at least some point in the run, I'm like, oh God,
I gotta get out of
here.
It's
hard. Yeah. It's just hard.
Now, see, when I've wanted to quit, but it's while I'm not working. Do you understand what I want to quit looking.
While I'm not working, that's when I want more. I don't want to quit when I'm not working.
Well, because you got 2 weeks.
Because I need it.
Because you're talking about 2 weeks. I mean, you know, like for me, like the times that have been the hardest for me is when I literally have no idea what I'm doing. And people now, even with this job, as soon as I got this job, I'm in New York and people are like, what are you doing next? And I will say, are you out of your mind?
I know.
I just started in Hamilton on Broadway. How dare you ask me what's next? I don't know.
I'm
going to be the king until I retire at 65.
Yes.
So, you know, like for me, it's just like such a relief to get to be, and maybe because I'm more of a character guy, you know, and because I literally didn't work for a paycheck for the first 3 years out of college. My first job was like $7 a show.
Yeah.
So I just think it's interesting because that's got to shape our perspectives on what this
profession
is.
It is. But it's also, too, everybody attacks the business differently.
Yeah.
And I, for a long time, had no representation.
Right.
I did not get representation until I came out of grad school. So any job that I had...
Wait, so when did you go to grad school?
I didn't go to grad school till 2007. 7, 8, 8, 9, 9, 10.
Right.
So anything before 2010, actually, is when I got Abrams. So anything before 2010, I literally got on my own.
Right.
Through, like, sheer will, hustle, annoying people... Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I had no rep, no manager, no agent. Right. And so I think, and I said yes to everything.
Yeah.
So for me, it doesn't matter if I'm doing the craft and it's not paying me enough to cover rent, it's still a job.
Sure.
I consider it still a job.
Sure.
Even if it's like, you know, so when I say I haven't, you know, I've been working consistently, like
right.
I've been doing.
You've been doing your craft.
I've been doing.
It's not necessarily what's been filling up your bank account.
Oh my God. It hasn't been enough. So I'm not saying that I wasn't working and still struggling.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just saying that there's only been a couple times when I literally have not been doing the craft.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because the regional theater, I stayed in regional theater. And actually, one of the years that I didn't work a lot was the year when I was like, I'm not doing regional theater. Mm-hmm. That was the first time. So mm-hmm. when I decided that I wasn't doing regional theater, mm-hmm. I was just in New York trying to make it happen. No job.
Mm-hmm.
Catering.
Catering.
With like three different companies.
Yeah. I've done a lot of catering.
Oh, my God.
Every time I see a caterer, I always go for the food. I'm like, I know you have to clear this plate. I know that you have the pressure to get rid of this food. Oh. So I'll eat it for you.
I took many a silver tray home.
Yeah, yeah.
Folded it in half.
Yeah.
With Saran wrap and a bottle or two of something.
Nice.
And then the second year that I didn't work a lot was when I made a conscious choice. I don't want people in New York to think of me just as an understudy.
Right.
Or just as in the ensemble. Mm-hmm. So I made a conscious choice to literally turn down every job that I felt like that's not going to challenge me.
Right.
I know that's not going
to
challenge
me. How hard of a decision is that to make?
Hard. Mm-hmm. Hard. And a decision is not for every artist to make. That's not a decision every artist should make. I think that you should only make it if you truly feel in your life that you're at the point where you're willing to make that sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not about ego. It's more so just about the same thing that led you to your first audition. Let's just see what happens.
Right.
And trust, after that year, when I had turned down all that stuff, one of the first jobs I had back was the understudy in Sideshow.
Really?
Yep. Understudying Jake. But at that point, my perspective in taking that job was different. It wasn't about being an understudy. It was actually about, I have some financial goals. I need this job.
You have a family.
I have a family now, yeah. But at the time, I was just like, I need this job. I'm going to do this job for a certain period of time. So that, you know, I started thinking about it like, no, I need a job. I need a salary. I need money so that I can do certain things and save. And, you know
right.
what I mean?
As you get older, your priorities change.
So being an understudy, I had no scar on my ego. It had nothing to do with me.
Yeah.
In a sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No worries.
You gonna bang on the drum?
Do you have to test everything?
Yeah, you guys
want to
see me play?
Yeah, do it. Drum test.
All done.
Wow, that was fast.
You didn't do the cymbals.
I'm just checking mics.
Oh,
so
I see.
As long as I see.
Yeah,
you can hear the mics. The cymbals will work.
Yeah, yeah. And
if they don't, John will know. Now, do you know about this stool and that it vibrates?
Oh, totally.
Why?
Oh, wait, turn it on.
It's on.
Everybody wants to know this.
Okay. You're being recorded.
It's called a butt kicker.
Mm. Okay.
Really. Interesting.
So it's butt kicker?
Yep.
Anything that's like super low end, like all the bass, John will like feel it in his seat. And it's just like, it's just a little more feeling. So, a lot of times I think drummers have like subs around them.
Right.
So it's like compensating.
I see.
Oh.
And then, like,
so they can feel
so
the bass.
Bass guitar, the bass.
Yeah, and like
the in the piano too.
Like I can feel that in the seat.
Oh.
Oh.
Just a little bit. Yeah.
Now
does it transmit the bass?
I thought
out
it was
there?
So that his butt awesome. Didn't fall asleep.
That's what I thought too. To keep his back
no,
moist.
I think, don't
does
laugh.
Does Jake have
I
one
think
of
that's
those?
A,
no.
He needs one.
I want one at front of house too.
But
I
hear
think
me.
Everyone should have one.
No, no, but Jake's back is hurting. He needs this. That'll
yeah,
be like the
true.
Vibration he needs for his spine.
But here's my other question. Why does it move sometimes on its own?
Because somebody out there was playing
yeah.
bass.
Yeah, so if like Dan's warming up, Like, anything that he plays will go through this, essentially, because it's all low end, you know?
Last question. Why are there mosquitoes in here?
I can't answer that.
Okay, because I've never seen
Are they
mosquito
mosquitoes?
Yeah, that's a, mosquitoes? That was, there's a mosquito.
All right, well, we have a mosquito issue.
I hate mosquitoes.
In the drum room. All right, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Carry on.
Carry on.
Good conversation.
Sure.
Good vibes.
Thank you.
To be continued, I will also say that I am one of the only actors my age whom you'll meet that had, that has had a very, very traditional trajectory.
Yeah.
Traditional. Like, yeah. I you know, did the arts in high school, studied in college. I just, my first job was doing literally children's theater, pipe and drape theater, folding my own clothes, ironing my own costume, traveling right. in the back of a hot-ass van from gymnasium to gymnasium in West Bumblefuck.
Yeah.
I did that for 2 years. You know,
yeah,
and then I like moved up to like do something in a smaller theater, the Woolly Mammoth Theater in DC or the 8th Street Playhouse.
Right.
Then I moved up to do. Do you know what I mean? So yeah. like I've had a long.
You've paid your dues. You are.
No,
you've done.
Not
your...
even that. I just. It's just. I've always thought of this thing. My biggest desire for this whole, the outcome of this whole unrealistic life.
Right.
Is that I can have a very long, steady career that by the end, people will just look back and say, he was a good artist. Like, yeah. he was a good actor. Like, I don't yeah. need the awards. That's been the biggest payoff for me. It's just, I just want a long, steady, productive career. And at the end, I just want people to look back and be like, yeah, he was good.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
So, I don't believe in, you know, the paying your dues. I don't believe in that. It's just, you're always paying your dues. Hmm. If you want to stay in this for life, you're always paying your dues.
Right.
Because you're paying your dues to all the artists that came before you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's not even like, there's no end to the dues that you should be paying. Especially as long as we're doing something that the rest of the world doesn't consider a real job.
Right.
We're all like half lucky.
You know what I? You know what? It's fun. You know what's interesting is every time I talk to people about Hamilton, about what we do, they always say, "Is it just so much fun?" And it is.
Yeah.
It is. So it's literally. It could not be more fun, especially for me. Like I, you know, obviously. But what you know, when people keep asking me that so much, it's. I want to start talking to them about them
yeah.
and what's going on with them, not because like I know what they're saying to me mm-hmm. but it's because it's the number one question that I'm asked over and over again. Are you having so much fun? You look like you're having so much fun. And I am. And then you start to feel challenged, like, am I having enough fun? Like, am I enjoying the moment as much as it looks like I am? And I think I am, but you know what I mean? It kind of screws with you. And I think that it's kind of along the lines of what you're saying is that people don't think of it as a job.
Yes.
And I've sometimes have the conversation with people and saying, it is fun. It's great. But it's a lot of work and it's a lot of dedication and it is a job. You know, like it's okay. And they get disappointed and they don't really want to hear that.
They don't want to hear that.
And so I feel like... Especially people who are listening to this.
Yes.
If some people are, you know, half an hour into a podcast episode of mine, then they understand that, you know, that it is a job. Like they get, you know, that's one of the reasons that they're listening to it is that I think it's always, to me, doing Book of Mormon, doing Hamilton, and realizing this is as great and as much fun as you can have on a stage as humanly possible to reach those heights and know that it still turns into a job on some days.
Sure.
That's liberating to me because everything is work and that's okay. Like you can still be full of joy and still have days that are work, no matter what you're doing.
Yeah. And you know, you could pose that question to anybody in any profession.
Right.
You know, you're a number cruncher for IBM. Awesome. Are you having fun?
Mm-hmm. Right.
If the answer is no, the validity of that question is still the same.
Sure.
Do you want to? Would you rather be doing something that you'd have fun at?
Yeah. Right. Which everyone does. I think that there's this idea that there are jobs out there that aren't work at all, and they're just completely fun. And nothing worthwhile mm-hmm. is easy and only fun.
Yeah.
It's a challenge.
Yeah.
And that's like what life is about. That's what, you know, and, you know, I don't know. It's always interesting to talk to people about this. And yeah. I always, especially when you're playing the king and you're only on stage for 20 minutes. Obviously, I'm not really working. I know that. I'm fully aware. But, you know, there are still days.
You have to stay in it. Your job, listen, you and the ensemble have the hardest job, I think, in Hamilton. Because.
Well, the ensemble for sure.
The ensemble for sure. And I definitely think you, because you have to stay in it. No matter how you're feeling.
Yeah.
And in between such long stretches.
Right.
You have to stay in it. My contact folded in my eye. So I'm just trying to work it out. No, it's fine. It's okay.
Oh, you're good with them. Yeah, I see you just got a little circular motion.
Yeah. And
it goes right back in. Does it happen on stage sometimes with your contacts?
Yeah. And it's annoying. There it is.
Oh, there it is.
Better for it to come out than to get stuck
here. Do you go to the restroom?
No, I have new ones. I just leave that for John. I'm going to put it on his butt vibrator.
Okay, we're just going to keep that a little secret that you just flicked the contact into the drum set.
Yeah.
John doesn't listen to this.
Yeah.
I had LASIK done in 2010.
Is it good?
I mean, it's great. It feels like x-ray vision, and I love not having to worry about contacts, but it's a major thing. Like, I kind of went into it thinking it was going to be zap, zap, and
yeah.
you're done. And it's like, you sign the paper saying you know you could go blind. If I had a friend watch it be done, you could see on a video screen it happening, and they slice your eye open. So it's major. So I always say that. I'm like, yes, it's wonderful, and it's been life-changing for me.
But you still could go blind.
Sure. Yeah, you could go blind doing it.
That's
now I've
awkward.
Said. Now, like, I am very happy with my results. I've heard from other people who didn't have great results.
Really?
Yeah. 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 I mean, not like they went blind, but, you know, it's a risky thing. But I did do it because of being on stage.
I know. That's a problem. And you save so much money in the end. You know how much money I've spent on
yeah.
contacts and eyeglasses
yeah.
since I was 10 years old, 8 years old. I've had glasses since
but
I
now,
was
But now, you know, I can't wear glasses. I kind of miss that. Like, just once in a while. I never liked to wear glasses
yeah.
until I didn't have to anymore.
Yes.
And I was like, oh.
No reading glasses either?
No. Just, that's I mean, awesome. I'm sure I will at some point because
it doesn't
fix your reading.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so anyway, off of contacts, where
yeah.
were we?
Fun.
Oh my
Isn't
gosh,
it
so much fun.
Fun.
Okay, so let's go back to you take the understudy job. You're like, I have different priorities, they
yep.
change. That's for sideshow.
Yep.
So was that that wasn't your first Broadway show. What order was that in?
That was my third.
Third.
That was my third.
Okay. So you are in that show, and that wasn't too long ago, right?
No, did sideshow. It closed early.
Right.
I was actually doing sideshow while I was rehearsing for sideshow. I was doing Intimate Apparel out at the Westport Playhouse.
Oh, okay.
In Connecticut,
okay.
And doing the commute every day.
Wow.
And so, but then when the Intimate Apparel ended, I was just doing sideshow, and then sideshow closed early, and I did, I can't remember what order Hamilton came, the lab production of Hamilton.
Right.
When they first put it, when we first put it on its feet.
Right. You get the call.
I was able to do that in Washington's role.
Wow.
Because Chris just happened to not be available at that time.
Right.
And then, but I can't remember.
What was that like?
That was in April. It was insane. It was amazing because I was at the New York Stage and Film Festival at Vassar when they did like the first kind of big public reading.
And you saw it?
Josh was King George.
Oh, nice.
Josh was King George. Chris was Washington. I can't remember who played Aaron Burr, but you know, that's when Leslie saw it then and was just like,
oh.
I have to have that role.
Wow.
I have to have that role.
Wow, what a performance.
My goodness.
That was at Vassar. That's so funny.
Yeah. So we witnessed it. And David, who I was already friends with from my first professional show outside of grad school, he and I remained friends. And, you know, he was already attached and working on it.
Right.
It was Jefferson then. And
yeah.
Everybody in the room, like, they finished the last song. And there was, like, a silence for what seemed forever. It was, like, 30 seconds of just silence. Wow. And then, like, a raucous applause. People didn't know what hit them. They were like, that is the best thing I've ever heard. And it was a reading. And by that time, they had the story pretty tight.
Yeah.
So when we did the lab and we put it on its feet, then it was like the choreography. We did 3 performances for invited audiences only. Then after that, Chris's show, Holler If You Hear Me, closed early. So he then became available again to do Off-Broadway and the Broadway.
Right.
Yeah.
So you'd been a part of this from its infant stages.
Yeah.
Then you went into The Color Purple. Was that...
I went in to do something. I can't... Like, I think I did Hamilton. Yeah, I did Hamilton and then Sideshow, understudy.
Oh, okay. Got it.
And
how did Color Purple come about?
Okay. So back to, like, being my own representation.
Yeah.
I was in Seattle. At the time, I had moved to Seattle after a Sideshow closed early because my wife and I, well, then my girlfriend, we were having Solomon, our son. And, you know,
we knew cutest little boy.
My God, he's a mess.
He's how old
so
now?
Cute. 2.
2. And I've been waiting for you to be on this podcast so we could tell everyone his nickname for me. You brought him to, like, a rehearsal. Yeah. He was at a rehearsal.
He came to the dress run.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And so when you introduced him to me afterwards, or like weeks afterwards, you said, "This is Rory. He plays the sparkly lady."
Sparkly lady.
He thinks I'm the sparkly
lady.
He got all
shy.
That is without a doubt the best description of my character.
He wanted to hear da da da. That was the only song from the show he would listen to for months. Da da da. Da da da. And then Stacey showed him like the YouTube where they play the song and just show the picture,
because
without the moving, just the picture. Yeah. He was like da 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 da. And he could for like what da da da? The sparkly lady.
Oh my god! I'm gonna have them change it in the playbill that I'm playing the sparkly lady. None of this King stuff.
There's a sparkly lady. She's postmenopausal and she's singing da da da.
I don't know why she's postmenopausal, but I'll take it. You know, I love the Golden Girls.
Because she's singing bass.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Okay, okay. Yeah, I'm a B. Arthur. I'll take that. Okay, so you are going into Color Purple. I stopped you from telling that story.
Well, no, we'd gone to Seattle. I was in Seattle doing a bunch of great theater in Seattle. Love that community.
Okay.
Go do the work there. They're amazing. Every day, I just have a habit of going online and I just look at Playbill or look at Equity just to see whether I'm in a job or not. I always go on just to see what's coming down the pike.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times for Equity, if you go on there every day, you see stuff auditioning like 2 years prior.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, I remember like The Mystery of Edwin Drood. Yeah. I remember when they first started auditioning for that and then it didn't come to Broadway for like 2 or 3 years later.
Right.
So I was online looking at Equity, and I see open calls for Color Purple.
Right.
A revival of Color Purple. I was like, open calls? That means they've already done the principal auditions. And I was like, what the hell? I didn't hear about this at all.
Right.
Called my agents up. I was like, hey, listen, I just saw this on Equity. What's up with that? Was I submitted? They were like, oh, we don't know. I was like, what do you mean you don't know? Did you forget I sing? Like, what happened? And I had already done a musical or two in New York, even though my background is in musicals. After grad school, I just was considered an actor, I suppose. So then, so they were like, okay, yeah, we'll check on it. They called me back immediately. They were like, we don't know what happened, but we submitted you. And they almost got that mother. Oh, almost got him.
We almost
got
it.
I got one eye. I can't see. But they were like, can you fly here for callback weekend? They'll see you for callback weekend if you can get here.
Wow. From Seattle.
From Seattle. Mind you, I'm doing theater in Seattle, which means I had no money.
Right.
And I just had a new baby. And we just moved all of our shit from New York. I had no funds. Mm. Called my dad, asked to borrow some money for a flight.
Yeah.
Found a round trip ticket for $430 at the last minute, fortunately. I held my agents to the fire, though. I said, listen, I will come back for this audition. But I was like, you better get me two more auditions at least while I'm there.
Right. Make the most of this trip.
Because I'm not coming back for just this. And y'all dropped the ball. Yeah. So you better make up for it. So they got me two other auditions, and I came back, and I did those auditions, and I then also told them, I said, I need two more auditions, and I need you to tell Color Purple I need to know before I leave New York whether they want me or not.
Right.
And that's what happened.
Wow.
I went, did two auditions, I mean, two or three auditions for a couple of other things, and I went in, did the audition. I didn't think I got it, because at the end of the audition, John Doyle said, so, you know, we're not, I can't do a Scottish accent, but he said, you know, we're not going to, there's no makeup or hair, and the show you're supposed to age, I mean, you know, the show spans like 40 years.
Right.
We're not doing any of that stuff. He said that at the end, so I was like, oh, I'm too young, which I thought going into it.
Right.
Because Mr., they usually cast him as like this big, older, brooding guy. Although I thought he should be young, because it helps us receive the story a little bit more.
Sure.
And then I got a callback, and I was like, okay, there might be a chance here. So at the callback, at the end of the callback, then he said, can you do it like you're 60? So I did it again, as if in my imagination of being 60. And then I found out the next day, like by lunch, that I had gotten it.
Wow.
So we moved everything back to New York.
That's always how it goes.
Always. Always. And then my contract for Color Purple after a year was done in November. By that time, we had already kind of started loose talks about how I can join Hamilton.
Because you'd already been a part of the family.
That's right. That's
done
right.
The role.
That's right. And so they looked for an opportunity for me to come join the Broadway cast. Yeah. And then they looked for an opportunity for me to join the Chicago cast. And I said, you know, we really want to get back west. So I know that eventually you guys are going to do something for L.A.
Right.
Call me
when that's
available. A little more solidified.
And here we are.
And here
in
we
the drum
are.
Room in San Francisco at the Orpheum Theater.
Having so much fun
swatting away bugs.
Yeah.
Let me ask you just a specific like actor question. Mr. and George Washington could not be more different.
Yes.
How do you attack, like, obviously, I've seen your George Washington wonderful portrayal many, many times. I was privileged enough to see the cast of Color Purple, which was a remarkable production, and your performance was so good. Mm. That has got to be a really specific challenge as an actor.
Totally.
Because he's horrible,
but
he's a human, and the story makes you see both of those things.
Sure.
So how you tackle a character like that? Is it different than you do with George Washington?
Yes. I mean, my preparation for it wasn't necessarily different because they're both historically based stories. The setting of these stories is historical.
Yeah.
And so I love history.
There's a lot of things to research.
There's a lot of stuff to research. And I always do. I love history. I love giving myself kind of that firm, realistic, historical foundation.
Because
you get so much information from that in terms of even how to approach this thing.
Right.
And so I did that with both. I think the difference is that I wanted Mr. to be... I wanted to accomplish two things with Mr. With Mr., I wanted him to be, I wanted him to be the scary black guy on the train that every white person was afraid of, but not for any reason other than they just are unfamiliar. He just looks scary. That's it. Because I get that look all the time sometimes.
Huh.
If I'm not dressed, you know, neatly and my hair isn't neat and all that shit, you know, I get that look all the time. So I wanted him to be like, in a sense, I wanted him to be the black man that America created or tried to create and has created in many cultures, in many communities, rather. I also wanted him to be the man that a lot of women who are in domestic abuse relationships, I wanted him to be the man that they are in a relationship with.
Right.
Meaning, I wanted him to be charming at some point. I wanted him to be sexy at some point. I wanted him to be accessible so that those women and men could see themselves in him.
Right.
And hopefully that'll translate into their own lives.
Hmm. It's a lot to juggle, though. You know what I mean? Like that. And I, you did. You absolutely did. I just, it's such a challenge. It's a unique challenge, especially with a subject matter like domestic violence, that kind, and especially that kind of abuse. And
absolutely.
And because it's a certain time.
Yes.
And, you know, that's a lot.
It's a lot. And I think that it was necessary in order to let the story be of service.
Yes.
And Cynthia and I talked about this a lot. We'd had many conversations after the show over the phone till late night about like how much of ourselves we're bringing to this story. And I brought a ton of myself into The Color Purple. You know, I'm like, no, I'm not a person that subscribes to domestic abuse, you know, but Mr.'s emotions, I can totally relate to.
Sure.
And I can totally relate to the product of history that creates a person like Mr.
Sure.
Unfortunately, the script doesn't delve into a lot of that because the story is, it's about Seeley. I'm saying Seeley. The musical script.
Right.
I don't mean the book.
Yeah.
Alice Walker's book goes into that.
Yeah, yeah. Which is another great resource.
Oh, my God. But the musical book doesn't for economy reasons and, for whatever reason. So,
So I mean, it's a real masterclass to me to watch an actor like you. When I didn't know you when I saw you in The Color Purple, and then to get to know you and you just be this warm, sweet person, and then to get to see you be so commanding and heroic and courageous as George Washington, and what a... You're very versatile, and you know, I'm really proud to be on a stage with you.
I wish you had saw me do Booty Candy.
I don't know what that is, but I definitely wish I saw you do Booty Candy.
I hate to say it. I'm no shade on like any past director, but that is by far the best time I've ever had on stage. Is doing Booty Candy in Seattle. At Intiman Theater.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great... I've never been there, but I know that's a great theater.
Huh? Oh, Robert O'Hara wrote Booty Candy. Malaika Oyetemen, she is an up-and-coming director. She was fabulous. My amazing cast. And the story is just brilliant.
Yeah.
It's brilliantly written. And the way that it's told was brilliant. I had so much fun doing Booty Candy.
It's amazing because, like, you know, people wouldn't understand from the outside. Like, you can say, like, if you're in Hamilton, there's nothing that can ever compare. And obviously, in many ways, that's true. But to be able to have something that it was special, that it was in Seattle, that only a few select people got to see.
Yes.
There's a place in your heart and in your soul that nothing could ever compare with that.
Yes.
And that's a beautiful thing. Yeah. It's the blessing and the curse of being in theater because you do something and barely anybody gets to see it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't recreate it.
Yep.
But the fact that you can say, I was in this room and I shared that experience with the audience.
That's right.
For them.
That's right.
And that it's very communal that, you know, that's the beauty of what we do as well.
Yeah.
Well, I'm really... really glad that I got to talk with you.
Well, thank you.
This was probably covered any conversation I've had. We started
this
off.
This is the most we've gotten to know each other since we started.
That's true. Well, that's also why I love doing it.
That's right.
Do you ever get an hour to sit down and talk with your fellow actor about
you have to schedule time. You have to be like, Roy, will you meet me at the theater at 3? So we could just get to know each other.
Yes. Well, that's why I'm... I'm really glad that you did it, and I'm glad I get to speak with other cast members. Please tell them that it's harmless and fun.
I will.
And I really appreciate it. Thank you for coming in early. Now let's do Hamilton, an American musical.
It's so much fun.
Here we go.
Audition, side job, swimming upstream. Believe it or not, you're living the dream.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.